Okay, everybody. Welcome to the Grapevine Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Nikki and I'm an alcoholic. I'll be your host for the month of April. And this is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grapevine Open Meetings every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this online platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms on aagrapevine.org and on YouTube. This is an open meeting and everyone is welcome. We're glad you're all here, especially newcomers. If you're new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you to find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. This is the Grapevine Daily Quote for April Fool's Day, which I think is kind of funny that they asked me to start today. I wonder if there was a conspiracy. I had been undergoing a spiritual experience without knowing it. My confused questioning about a higher power, my changed mental attitude, and even my physical recovery had all been part of a spiritual awakening. Without knowing it, I had been in contact with the source of life, whatever or whoever that might be. And that comes from So That's a Spiritual Experience, York, Pennsylvania, from January 1977, Spiritual Awakenings, Journey of the Spirit. You can sign up to receive the daily quote as a daily email at aagrapevine.org, or you'll find it on the Grapevine app every morning. And this is an excerpt from this month's Grapevine magazine. Here it is. My morning prayer, higher power. I was perfect today. I didn't speak out in anger or sarcasm. I didn't take anyone's inventory or even become judgmental, not once. And now I'm getting out of bed. That's from Vern N. Kennel, Alaska, from at Wits End. So let's start today with a reading from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order. I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. Amazing. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. This will be a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing by attendees, so please just sit back, relax, and listen. I love open meetings because there's no pressure. We often hear it is best to try and identify with the speakers rather than compare your story with theirs. And I'll introduce my first speaker, Harriet W. Take it away.
Hi, everyone. I'm Harriet, and I am an alcoholic. It's wonderful to be here with you today. I want to tell you, I love being sober, and I love the Grapevine. So, Grapevine's been very important to me in my sobriety journey. So back to the beginning, I got sober in Maine, where I still live, and it was a tough process. It was a long process, it seemed to me. I had become dysfunctional in all of the roles that I was trying to play as a mother, a wife, a daughter, a sister, an employee. All of those had really gone down the drain as my drinking progressed into daily drinking. It got for me so bad to the point where I had to drink in the mornings before I could prepare my children's breakfast, or my hands would shake so violently that I wouldn't be able to do that. And that was not obviously a sustainable thing, because at that point then I also had to carry alcohol to work with me to get through the day for the same reason. And also faced some of the other repercussions that come when one has alcohol in their system 24/7, as I did, and that included racking up a couple of DWIs and the legal ramifications of all of that. And so alcohol really brought me to my knees. I was just so desolate and hopeless. And I tried a lot of different crazy things, like it says in our big book. I made a lot of rules about when I would drink or not drink, and then broke all those rules, and tried vitamin regimens and exercise regimens. And I even felt like I had tried AA. But for anyone who's wondering, if you get a sponsor and then continuously lie to that sponsor, it doesn't really work very well. I don't recommend it. And so I just wasn't ready at that point. But I had gotten involved and interested, and I saw other people that I believed had sobriety, and that I thought maybe if I hung out with them long enough, even though I was still drinking, that someday I might get it. And I guess that's kind of the spiritual awakening, how that proceeded for me. I was involved in going to meetings for 2 miserable long years while I was still drinking and lying to the sponsor that I had. And then finally took a break from life and went to the 12-step intensive rehab, and haven't had a drink from the day I left until this one, which will be, which is 15 years now, and getting close to 16. So how did I go from that hopeless state of mind, 24/7 drinking, couldn't make breakfast for my kids without vodka, to being a functional member of society and a contributing member to AA? That is really the true miracle of it. And so I went to the rehab that I had talked about, and really jumped in with both feet, and took every avenue that I could. So while I was at rehab, I lost my job. And while that seemed devastating, it turned into a real blessing, because I was able to, when I got back, focus fully on my recovery. I also lost that marriage, fell apart, which was also not surprising. At so there were a lot of struggles with alcohol there. And so then all of a sudden, I didn't have quite so many things to do. I had no job. I only had my kids half the time, and I couldn't drive, so I couldn't go anywhere. But I found a little house-sitting gig in town, so I was able to go to a lot of meetings, and I went to every meeting I could, and I could walk to a lot from there. And it was easy for me to get rides. And so I went to meetings as many as I could, morning, noon, and night. Certainly every day was not a struggle. And that gave me such a solid foundation in my recovery. I got myself a sponsor that I didn't lie to, or at least tried really hard not to, didn't consciously lie to. And we started working the steps. And she She just took me through it, through the big book, through just a step by step. We walked through it. Her higher power and my higher power would come to the kitchen table along with some cookies that she usually had, and just get that work done. And when so I was around 1 year sober when I was intensely working the steps with my sponsor. And at that point, started to become involved in service. After I had completed my fourth step, my sponsor cleared me for service and I jumped right in. And very shortly became a GSR for my home group, and have had one service position or another from that time until now. And in that early sobriety, there was and still is a beginners meeting in my district where they have many, many copies of Grapevine, old and new, that they're willing to give out to really anybody who wants them, newcomers and old timers alike. And I started reading those. And I remember one time, it was so sweet. I was laying in bed with my two young kids. We were kind of half reading, half watching TV, and I had my Grapevine out, and my youngest son next to me got interested and wanted to know what I was reading, and saw the 12 steps and asked me about it and what those were. And so I got a chance to talk to him about that. And then he said, "Mom, I think AA is neat." And that really sold me on like the power of having that grapevine. And he must have been about 10 years old or so at that time. And it was just a really special moment. And I haven't been without a grapevine subscription since then. And today, I sponsor women. And I love to give all of my sponsees a subscription to the Grapevine every year. So we're trying to spread the word in that way. Recently, one of my sponsees was going on her first sober vacation. And this is a really big deal. We've been working the steps hard. She was somewhat concerned about this. She at this time has not reached her first year of sobriety. And so she told me she'd been saving up the grapevines from her subscription, but she wanted to know if I had any extra copies so that she could have another stash with her. And boy, yes, I absolutely had some more copies to give her of older grapevine editions. And she came back sober and happy and tanned. So that's great. And definitely got through. She knew she wasn't going to have any live meetings that she was going to be able to get to with the transportation options immediately available. And so I was just delighted that she thought of, not me, that she thought of bringing some extra grapevines along, and that helped her in her trip. So, I travel a lot for my work now. I eventually became employable again, thanks to the steps of recovery and all of you, this beautiful program and the support that we have with one another. And I always have a copy of the Grapevine in my computer bag as I go amongst my travels. I did want to talk a little bit more about service and what that means to me and my recovery. For me, I loved being involved in service at the group level, and I still have a home group and attend that and try to be of service there. And I opened and closed meetings and have been coffee maker and treasurer and GSR, all kinds of positions at the group level, and then went on to serve as a DCM in my district, and subsequent to that have gotten involved more in that general service, which, and it's an honor for me to be serving for Area 28, which is Maine, as alternate delegate now. And those service experiences have just been tremendous for me and my recovery. It helps keep me engaged. It also helps keep things interesting because I'm always learning new things. I recently had the opportunity to serve as accessibilities chair at NARASA. That brought so much new learning of things that I had never been exposed to, platforms and people, and just a beautiful relationships that would not have occurred otherwise. And, you know, when I see you'll have a fellowship, you know, grow up around you. When I came in, I was really a loner. I was drinking in the closet by myself, literally a closet drinker. And I didn't have time for other people or friends. I was frantically trying to keep my alcohol addiction and trying to play the roles that I had to play that, as I mentioned, I failed at miserably. And there wasn't time for anything beyond that. You know, you have to, it takes a lot of energy to get the bottles into the house, get the bottles out of the house, hide all that drinking, try to, you know, check the boxes that you're trying to check. But today I have sponsees, I have a sponsor, I have numerous friends throughout AA, and it really has. It has grown up around me. I can text or be with people. I went to a beautiful anniversary celebration a couple of nights ago, and you know, there were just hugs all the way around with some people that I hadn't seen in a while, and people who had come from other districts to attend that particular celebration meeting. So I just want to say I love AA. I love the Grapevine, and I'm happy to be with you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Harriet. It's always great to hear you. And I've known Harriet for quite a while, so I'm glad to be watching her on the journey. When you spoke about how Grapevine you were reading with your children and they just became curious, I really could identify with that. My kids, who are not kids anymore, they're adults. I don't have to explain to them anymore what Alcoholics Anonymous is, because they know that's what mom does and what a gift that is. And the whole travel piece with whatever literature Alcoholics Anonymous has for us, Grapevines and such, I read them and leave them in some of the craziest places. Sometimes they're in the bathrooms at the airport. Sometimes they're in the doctor's offices. And while this is not a commercial for Grapevine, we always encourage talk of the Grapevine. So I have a few announcements. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix. You can find it on AA.org. Grapevine does not accept direct contributions, but of course we do have expenses. The best way to support Grapevine is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the app. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting aagrapevine.org. You can subscribe to the app by searching for AA Grapevine on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Grapevine books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing so, you'll be supporting both Grapevine and your local office. You can also visit the Grapevine online store at aagrapevine.org. The AA Grapevine Carry the Message project allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit aagrapevine.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our weekly podcast, the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free on all podcast platforms and on aagrapevine.org. Please follow Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube, too. The new season of Our Primary Purpose, the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous, is available. In its season two, it takes listeners on a journey across the fellowship, celebrating milestones, exploring how AA reaches anyone, anywhere, and shares stories that highlight the impact of service, self-support, and recovery in action. Tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platforms so you can catch every episode. And so next, I'm going to introduce our second speaker for today, and maybe we'll hear a little bit more about why they call him Backroads Gino. Turn it over to you, Gene.
Oh, my. Things you share with people that get spread around. That's how rumors start. My goodness. Welcome, everybody, to the show. I actually am peeking at some of the names on here. Some of you I recognize and appreciate you showing up here. Whether you knew I was going to be here or not really doesn't matter. But I like to feel good that you showed up for me. So my name is Gene. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 25th, 1996. With that, I also have a not drinking date. My not drinking date is February 25th of 1996. And I may explain that a little bit later, but I'll leave that there for now. My home group is the Rusted Servants that meets on Wednesday nights. It's an online meeting. I'm registered in Area 48, District 1, and check us out. It's a literature-based meeting. Once in a while, we might have something involving Grapevine, but you never can tell. It's been a great experience doing that. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor people. Seems as though these days I'm service sponsoring more people than I'm recovering sponsoring, but it's where God wants me to be. I'm not going to go a lot in the drunken log, at least I'll say that now. I mean, I find it really difficult to squeeze in 25 years of qualifying to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and nearly 30 years of sobriety into like a 15, 20 minute segment. But I'll do my best. I've seen many times people get involved in the drunken log and, you know, and time goes on and all of a sudden they didn't give themselves enough time to get sober. So, you know, because it's alcoholic, still unrecovered. And so I'll try not to do that. So what it was like, growing up, I was kind of this egomaniac with an inferiority complex. I never felt I fit in anywhere. And that's kind of how I grew up. I thought that was okay. I had a close group of friends that I, you know, played with, and that's kind of how it worked. And so I thought everything was good within the home and all that. But, you know, in retrospect, it probably had some dysfunction. I knew it. I was there, so there had to be a little bit of dysfunction at the very least. I thought that's the way life was going to be forever. When I was like 13, 14 years old, my parents got divorced. And that kind of changed my life forever. I found a whole new group of friends that really taught me some things that, you know, may have come in handy for some, but probably not the best thing in society. I did some things that I got caught a lot of things I didn't get caught doing, but there was quite a few things that I did get caught doing, and I'm not going to go into that. And so during that divorce, my mother had checked herself into what we call the, at that time was the Augustament Mental Health Institution in Amhigh, and she was having a nervous breakdown. And I remember my father coming, getting me, and then dished me off to a family we knew that was close to us, and that kind of how that summer went. Later on, my mother got discharged. The divorce proceedings started, and my mother got custody of me, and I'm living with her, and she's like all pumped up with all kinds of drugs and stuff, psychiatric, you know, to treat her mental illness. And some reason, I don't know, I believe God has always had a presence in my life, whether I recognized it or not. And God did an intervention with me and asked me to, told me, kind of directed me to go to my father to see if he would go back to court to get custody of me. And because I knew I was not going to do my mother any good, because I was like a train wreck, just hadn't hit anything yet. And so my father went to court, got custody of me, and I was living at my cousin's house. And I went to a new school system, not far from where I was before, but a very different school system. I went from a school system that had a high school that had a probably 1,200 students in it to a school that had under 400 and is very much more intimate. And so I'm making new friends and everything. And through those friends, I'm starting to hear all these stories. I mean, some of them had grown beyond their years and had some experience with alcohol. And so it made it sound so romantic and so like inviting, and like in the way they talked about it, like I knew I had to try that out. And so we chipped in our money, and we had somebody that could buy us a case of wine. It was a top shelf wine, trust me, for sure. I won't name brands, but it was good. And there's like four or five of us, and you know, we went out into a field so we wouldn't be bothering anybody. Nobody would be bothering us, or so we thought. And that was my first experience of getting drunk. And I've got this horrific wine hangover the next morning, and my head is pounding, and like, and I didn't get sick. I guess that was an achievement right away. But as I'm thinking about that experience, you know, that headache, that pounding head was a small price to pay how that made me feel. And for 25 years, I chased that feeling. I never quite hit that same spot. I'd either go buy it and get totally smashed and pass out, or I'd, you know, not have enough to get me to that point, you know. And I suspect on your line, you know what that I'm talking about when you're getting to that point. And so, like I said, I did that whole thing. I'm tempted to go off a whole bunch of other things, but I don't want to do that. Through the course of that 25 years, I got married. I had two boys, they're still my children. They'll never change, no matter how old they get. They're in their 40 and 36 right now, so that won't change. But and I got, you know, through that marriage and stuff, my wife tolerated a lot. I don't know. I'm speculating on, you know, the number of reasons, but I mean, she just, I don't know whether she was an Al-Anon in the making or what the deal was. So, but she hung in there, you know, and I will make this point. All the trouble I put her through, we're still married, and we're coming up on 43 years this June, which is just miraculous in my mind. She had every right to leave me many times, many, many times. And And so I'm so blessed with that. In the course of this, I drank every opportunity I had, and a lot of times it was behind the wheel. I think us Mainers have a knack for driving back roads under the influence of alcohol. And that's how this whole nickname of Back Road Gino came about. That's what my friends, I'd go out of my way to stay off in the main streets, in the back roads. And there was a good reason for that. I mean, we had a guy that was a chief of police, and he just told us this, I don't care if you go in the field, have the biggest party, do all of these non-conference approved substances. He didn't put it that way, but I am. Just don't come, just don't bother me, just don't make trouble in town. And so, okay, not a problem. We'll do that. And we're pretty obedient to that. What happened with me, I got my driver's license in the early 70s. That's when I started. I mean, I think I drove drunk before I even had a driver's license. But anyways, what happened is I made it to 1992 before I got my first OUI. Maine, it's operating under the influence, and I know some of it is driving under the influence. I figured the OUI covers a lot of perspectives because I know of people that have actually driven their lawnmower to the gas station to buy more booze, and they were already drunk, and they got arrested for OUI and habitual offender, and oh, it's just a very nasty thing. So that was my first introduction, to the law enforcement and what they do to people that, don't disobey the laws and drive drunk. And there was a lot of things that happened there. I'm not going to go into details, but let's just say I had to do this counseling thing. For Maine has this DEET program, which is kind of, it's supposed to be an educational program to help rehabilitate you. And part of the requirements was to for me to go counseling, and the counselor thought it'd be a good idea I'd show up sober. I didn't really think that was necessary since I didn't have a driver's license. But he put meat behind those words. I mean, it's not just about what you say, but it's the action that goes with it. And he basically told me that if I showed up there under the influence of anything, he was going to write the Secretary of State and have him keep my license indefinitely. And so that motivated me to stop drinking. And I stopped drinking for a long period of time. During that time, everything started getting better. My work environment started getting better. My relationship with my kids are getting better. My relationship with the wife got a lot better. And she was really appreciative of that. And so her way of showing her appreciation to me was to give me this third edition book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I really wasn't really very receptive for that, And so I threw the book across the room, said a lot of nice, kind words about how appreciative I was, and stormed out of the house. A few days later, I started drinking. I drank for another 4 years. And all the time thinking I was invincible and I wasn't going to get stopped again. And anyways, that happened. It happened in the form I was, I don't even know if I was a half a mile away from my house, and I'd gone underneath a turnpike overpass. And when I went and got past that, Adam says, "Oh, I'm almost home. I'm home free now. I can put on automatic pilot." And something blew out the pilot light, and I took it off my car off the road, and it was pretty nasty. Anyways, so I met a higher power that night. He was Kennebec County Sheriff, and he started to administer a field sobriety test, and I just thought I'd be proactive and like, why bother? And I reached out my wrists and just like, put the bracelets on, and let's go. And so that kind of got my attention. I think what happened is the intervention that God did is he had my wife and my children up to her parents' house in northern Maine. And so when I got home, they even took the dog. When I got home, there was nobody or anything to make excuses to of why I got get a summons for drunk driving. And what happened was I'm looking in the mirror and I'm looking at my skin. It's yellow. My eyes are all bloodshot. I mean, it was obvious at that point in time that I was physically ill. And so I kept looking in the mirror and I stared into my soul, realizing that I had all the people I had hurt because of my alcoholism. And for me, what happened is I left the mirror of the bedroom and I get out of the bedroom and there's a bookshelf there. And of all these books on the shelf, there's only one book that stood out to me. And that was a book called Alcoholics Anonymous that my wife had given me 4 years prior. And I started reading that book, and I did not want to admit that I was an alcoholic. I did not. Alcohol had become my best friend, my lover. I was really married to the alcohol than I was to my wife. And it served me, you know, to what it did. But anyways, so I'm looking at this book. I'm trying to get drunk. I'm reading the book. It's really not making a whole lot of sense. But I kept reading that book and all weekend long. My wife showed back up and she, you know, I'd tell the truth, seeing how the car really didn't look like the same car that she left. She asked me what I was going to do, you know, and I said, I'll get some help and everything. And I didn't know what help was going to look like. I looked through the yellow pages. There's nothing there that interested me. There was AA hotline and all this other stuff. And I just ignored all that. I didn't think that was going to work for me. And I showed up at work on Monday, tried to act like nothing had happened. I'm shaking. And that was on February 26th. February 25th was my not drinking date. And I showed up there and I was a mess. I was an absolute mess. And I'm just praying that no one would look at me and everything. And they didn't. They kind of left me by myself. I think they knew about my alcoholism long before I did. That's be the truth. And so I get home and my wife met me at the door and I think she's checking to see if I drank on the way home. And she asked me how it went. And I says, I didn't drink. And I broke down and started crying like a baby. I didn't know what I was going to do. And my wife had been looking at the newspaper that day and they had a list of what they call self-help. I know AA is not about self-help, but there was a listing of AA meetings in there, and I chose one to go to the following night. And I went there. It seemed pretty weird, all the stuff they did. They offered me a cup of coffee. They only gave me a half a cup, and, you know, I'm going like this, and I'm trying to wonder, you know, the cheap bastards. I'm sorry. I sat there through this thing, and there's like one of these meetings where there was like a young people on this side and older people over there, and they just seemed to be fighting the whole time. And like, I'm trying to figure out how that's going to teach me how not to drink. That's all I came there for, was to learn how not to drink. And what happened that night is, before I could leave that meeting hall, two men stood between me and those steps and they reached out their hand, and I met the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they says, we need you more than you need us. And they gave me a meeting list, and, you know, we have a lot of literature. And I think I own about every piece of literature that's ever been published, AA Grapevine or AA World Services. They gave me a meeting list. And so the meeting list to me is the most powerful thing we have for literature. And I kept going to meetings. And that's what I did for 4 years. I did this not drinking program and going to meetings and walking around with untreated alcoholism. And I didn't know what to do. And so I believe that God, of my understanding, put some people in my path. And so there's this guy, he started talking about supporting a mutual friend of ours who was facilitating a meeting in a correctional institution, a pre-release. And so we went there and we made a commitment to go there for a year. And I showed up, and one night the meeting was, you know, the guy that was facilitating, he'd bring in different speakers and they talk about their experience and how they recovered from alcoholism. And he talked about these two guys that are working a process, what they called the process, and working the steps out of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And so after 4 years, I mean, I was homicidal, suicidal. I was a mess. And they presented a message of hope that I just, there was something they did that was totally transformed them. I mean, one guy talked about being in a federal penitentiary for 7 years, out on probation, had 2 years over his head, and he's living in a halfway house. Instead of looking for a job, he's selling plasma so he can get money for booze. And there was a different person standing up there that night. Anyways, I end up, they end up having this big book conference, and I went there, and that big book conference changed my life forever. As a result of listening to these people, two AAs, one Al-Anon, talking about their experience of recovery from alcoholism. And when the Al-Anon spoke, talking about how they recovered from alcoholism through the 12 steps as laid out in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, I just knew I had to go there. And so one of those founders that spoke at the pre-release that night, I asked him to take me through that work, and he did. And I gave myself over to the process, over to him. If he had told me to jump off a bridge, that was going to, what it was going to take to not drink, I would have done that. He described, and when we first met, he says, you know, he talked about three-part disease, three-part solution, recovery of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, unity of the fellowship of AA, and service. And if I do all the work, I will recover, and I'm to bring in, my spirit will be awakened, and I'm to bring that awakened spirit to be of service to others. And he got me into service right away. I mean, the old saying is, if you want what we have, you'll do what we do. I was trying to emulate what he was doing. He was a district, part of the district. He had a job as area corrections. One of the first things he told me, he says, I need a corrections commitment. And I'm not really a jail guy. I'll tell you, I served seven days in the Kennebec County Jail. That was the extent of my incarceration. But I got involved in corrections. I got involved in general service. I went through the district. I ran through a whole bunch of jobs there. I'm not going to repeat all that. I end up in the area. I end up taking, you know, I had a committee chair position there. I chaired our main area roundup. Eventually, I became a delegate and served at the conference, the 66 conference in 67th. And it was all great. I've been so blessed with my service experience. It just, there's a lot of things I just cannot fit in the short time I have left here. With rotating off, I think delegates have a fear of having nothing to do when they become a past delegate. And so we're talking about the Northeast regional delegates. We're talking about what we're going to do when we rotate off. And so I had found out that they had created this National Corrections Conference, and they're going to have the first conference later that year. And I'm trying to figure out how to get involved in that conference and find out more information. And so when it came my turn to talk, I just says, well, I'm going to make it my business to bring the National Corrections Conference to Maine. And so I went down there, I put together a bid package. I'm pretty thorough in some of the things I do. I get pretty detailed orientated, maybe too detailed. But I went down there with a bid, and like, they didn't see me coming. We end up being, there was a tie between Maine and Houston, and Maine came out of the hat. So we were able to host the second annual National Corrections Conference. That was more rewarding than it was to be a delegate at the General Service Conference. I just have fallen in love with the the corrections work. And that doesn't stop people from asking me to do other things too. Nikki had a belly button birthday this weekend, and it was like, it was the helium hand, you know, this hand that just, you know, just kind of goes up by itself. I'm one of those people. And, I heard this one time from somebody in the conference. I'm going to say it's mine now. But you know, every time I get to do a little bit for Alcoholics Anonymous, I get to pay just a little bit of a debt that I can never repay for the life I've been given because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the people on this call. So I don't know if you want me to talk more, Nikki, or just no.
That's
she tells
great.
Me, shut up.
I did not say shut up. I just gave the eye.
Yeah.
No, thanks, Gene. And this month's Grapevine is the special edition of Getting Into General Service. And these two folks that I asked to be on with us today are a perfect example. And I appreciate that whenever I ask them for anything, as long as they can do it, they will. And when they can't do it, they seem to make time to do it anyway. So please let your friends know about our meeting. It's an open meeting, so it's also ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when doing cooperation with the professional community or public information work. And I'd like to ask Harriet to provide us with a closing today.
Thank you, Nikki and Jean. It was great to hear you. Thank you. I'd like to close, since this grapevine is about general service, let's close with the responsibility statement. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible.
Thanks, Harriet. Thanks, Jean. Thank you all for joining us for the Grapevine Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Please join us again next week and have a grape day.